You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast. Championship weekend is over. Surprising results, MWWire.com. Again, that's MWWire.com to read all of our content, which apparently Matt today, a lot of people decided to do that, so we appreciate that. To keep it coming, right?
Well, you know, we got the news coming in very quickly, and maybe shout out specifically to Brett McMurphy for over at the Action Network for breaking out all the bold news today. But yeah, you know, surprising result from yesterday, some surprises that came up today, as far as, you know, bowl matches, eight of them all together. So that's, you know, eight more games that we have to look forward to. But, after that, it's the long off season again. So
we'll get to, we have plenty to talk about this week because we'll get to the bowl stuff in a real quick, but I think one thing we need to discuss, we might be doing a Hawaii centric podcast later this week because that's interesting. Then also what will be interesting, we'll bring this up quickly into bowl stuff. I'll mention it now. Who's playing for Hawaii and Fresno State? We'll find out later, I guess, right? Because that makes bowl season interesting. But let's just get to it. The Mountain West title game. If you saw this coming, you're a bit big fat liar. With Utah State dominating this game. Crushing the Aztecs like a grape.
If you listen to our preview podcast, you knew that I had the Aztecs winning this game. So I had sort of an inkling of how I thought this game was ultimately going to go. But I did not see this.
So you're telling me an Aztec defense that was giving up 17 points per game, best special teams in the country, would give up 46 points and have three special teams miscues lead to at least 9 points, maybe 16 points?
So, okay. Do you want to start with the unexpected stuff or the stuff that I sort of anticipated? Because I think, you know, the short answer there is yes and no.
Can we start the COVID stuff? Because that's a big deal.
Let's start with that. Yes.
That's where we should. That was a concern, but I always swat people away and mute people left, right, and Twitter. I'm like, guys, 20 people gone we are not dumb and think that it's not an issue. But when it's only your starting tight end as a key contributor, I know they had to put a left tackle or something.
Dominic Gudino.
Yeah, he had to play tight end. However, does Matt, can I ask a question? How often does San Diego State really throw to their tight ends?
Not that often. I believe he had like what, 15, 20 catches this year?
How often do they throw in general? Not very often.
Not very. Yeah, okay, so to expand upon that, but then I'll let you continue your point. Mm-hmm. You know, they mentioned that there was like, you know, 20 players roughly that were out for this game. Mm-hmm. On the broadcast, they only mentioned five. So they mentioned the three tight ends that had received the bulk of the playing time this year. So Daniel Bellinger was, of course, the starter. He was out. Jay Rudolph, I believe, was his backup. And then there was one other guy whose name escapes me. There's three tight ends. It was their wide receiver three, Tyrell Shavers, and one of the backup offensive linemen, Darrell Besant. So I went through because, you know, people kept bringing it up like, well, okay, they were missing 20 players. They're missing 20. So I went through and I looked at the participation report that was generated afterwards. And I compared
broadcast or something.
Yeah. And I compared that to the depth chart that the Aztecs had coming into this game, which again, it probably isn't like a perfect exercise, but I didn't see a lot of names that weren't listed on the two deep that were that didn't end up playing in this game. And maybe more to the point, when you look at the starting lineup for who the Aztecs actually threw out there, Bellinger was the only name yeah. really missing from that. Like everybody on the starting 11 on defense played in this game, as well as, you know, pretty much every single primary backup. And I think that's especially true in like the secondary, which tends to play a lot of guys back there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the starting offensive line was intact. You know, maybe some of their backup depth was sort of forced into different situations. Like, you know, Gudino was forced to be a tight end and they were missing, yeah. you know, other, but you know, they had all their other skill position players. You know, they had the starting quarterback, Jordan Brookshire. And so, yeah, I want to say it was like maybe sort of a factor, maybe in terms of like their ability to rotate guys in and out. But then at a certain point, that stops being an excuse. When you get blown out like this.
This reminds me of the Boise State blowout versus BYU. Remember, like they had a million guys out COVID and we're out 5 guys, 10 guys, third string quarterback, all that stuff. But you know, it also doesn't impact when, because it, we're not saying it's not a concern, but when, here's what I want to say. There was wide open drop passes, a pick six that should have happened. Your putter blocks the ball at the back of your protection helmet for a safety. And you drop interception in your lap at basically which would have been a touchback. It wasn't just the missing guys, but there was multiple opportunities. A little bit lucky, like the fumble and the touchdown with Calvin Tyler Jr. Mm-hmm. fumbling, and you know, that's a little fluke and lucky. But at least 3 to 5 plays, at least 2 on defense. One was a pitcher. Was it Trent Thompson who should have that pick six? Went right through his hands.
One of them.
What was he responsible for the one that fell off his knees in the end zone too? Essentially.
So if we're going to take this in chronological order,
I just remember what I saw because my internet was an issue during the first half, so I was
So take it in chronological order. So Thompson did have the first one; it was in the first quarter. Yeah, and it was right after, and maybe more to the point, you know, where you sit, where to my point of view, like at some point the COVID stops being an excuse and sort of takes away credit from what Utah State was able to do.
It was scoreless in the first quarter. Both teams were playing good defense and not great offense.
And here's the thing, you know, one of the very first turning points in this game was it was on that, you know, 4th and 1 at the Utah State 12. Mm-hmm. And the running play gets blown up in the backfield by Justin Rice and Byron Fonz. So it was, I believe, on the drive right after, or no, it wasn't a drive right after that. I think it might have been a couple drives later. That was where Thompson had what should have been an interception.
And a touchdown.
Yeah.
He would have taken that back for 6.
Because it was a pretty dangerous throw that Bonner had. But then, you know, beyond that, you know, they weren't able to, you know, neither side was able to get anything going, but at a certain point, like I said, you have to start giving the Utah State defense credit for that, because you know, one thing that became apparent pretty early in this game is that the Aztecs had a lot of trouble converting on third downs in this game.
They're like 0 for 9 or something.
One for 11 overall, but even in the situations where they were, you know, more favorable, you know, it wasn't like they were, you know, behind the eight ball all the time. Like, you know, their first four or five third down situations was 3rd and 5, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 3, 3rd and 7. So like not impossible crazy situations.
3rd and 8, tricky, but still not impossible, like you said.
You know, like the third down distance between these two teams on average was not totally different. For the Aztecs, they were facing basically 3rd and 7.5 at, you know, on average. Utah State was 3rd and 6.5. So it wasn't like Utah State was tilting
short every time.
It wasn't like they were tilting those situations in their favor a lot. But even when they did, Utah State found more ways to take advantage of it, like in 3rd and short in particular. So four yards or fewer. San Diego State was only 1 of 3. Utah State was 4 of 6. Like that right there is a huge difference. But and then beyond that, you know,
it's also three and outs today too. Like not just not converting third downs, but not even, well, that's part of it, but a million 3 and outs or there's stuff like that. I get all lines up, but they were not having any extensive drive, which it doesn't matter how good your defense is.
Yeah, other than the turnover on downs, I think it was, you know, three of their first four drives ended with three and outs.
Should they have gone for a field goal in that possession early on? When it was 0-0, their third drive of the game, they barely moved the ball. They finally have a good drive, and then they go for it and don't get in.
No, because and this was, you know, this goes back.
I like to aggressive, but I'm just figuring at that point, there's no point. Just been a couple of drives, get some on the board.
No, because, and you know why? Because I think at that point you're saying, if we get points for our defense, we trust our defense to be able to hold, you know, to hold up. And so, you know, those are exactly the type of situations that I was talking about, I think, most explicitly when it came to Utah State in our preview.
It was how aggressive Anderson would be.
Yeah, because, and they had proven to be the more aggressive team just throughout the season in fourth down situations. And so, you know, in that situation where it's, you know, fourth and one at the 12, you know, all you need is 1 yard to get a first down. Yeah. I mean, I think if I'm San Diego State, I trust my, you know, what I think I do best, that running game, to be able to get it done. It's just, you know, Utah State went in and made a good defensive play. But it's just, you know, but after that, though, then you started seeing some of the other cracks that you mentioned earlier. You know, you mentioned, like, you know, the special teams lapses that ultimately came up. But to me, it was more the penalty trouble.
Oh, geez.
The ad that the Aztecs started getting into.
I stopped counting to how many 15 yarders they had. I remember at least four they had 9 for 120. They had freaking Matt Araiza had a personal foul against them. Geez, I know they had 9 for 120. Do you know how many 15 yarders? There's at least four.
They had five of them altogether, plus like, a 15 yard pass interference penalty on offense.
Well, I've had 15 in general, so, but yeah, but a lot. That's,
yeah, so that's, like,
hurts
and,
you bad.
And maybe you can make the case, as I think, you know, some Aztec fans were, that, you know, some of those were maybe a little more ticky tack. Because, you know, one
on Cameron Thomas wasn't hard, but it's just, he took too many, like, it wasn't like a brutal hit, is that he took too many steps and pushed him over. Like,
yeah.
It's, there wasn't a hard foul. It's just, he can't take that many steps and push. That would go against anybody. Like, if, even if it was a running back, a pass was high, like a swing pass, way too high, 1, 2, 3, and knock him over, that could be a personal foul itself for like a late hit.
Yeah, so it was, so it was
more
that,
specifically.
So it was that first scoring drive that Utah State had, where it was, I don't want to say it was like flipping a switch, but it was like you could tell something in the game had changed, because that was where Araiza had the very first punt blocked. It was, you know, fourth and 13 at their own 26 yard line. Yeah. Reese Jarvis gets in to block that punt. Mm-hmm. Very next drive, you know, it's, you know, they have the personal foul penalty on Patrick McMorris, where he hits Calvin Tyler Jr. out of bounds on a short swing pass.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man, geez.
You know, the three plays later, they complete a 5-yard touchdown to Derek Wright. And so, you know, at that point, you know, you're basically giving up free real estate. You know, it wasn't like Utah State needed the help in order to kind of get things moving. You know, they had, like, they got one big play in that first quarter. But other than that, they were relatively quiet. You know, like, they weren't necessarily getting as many chunk plays as I think they were hoping to. And it wasn't for lack of trying either. But then, you know, those same things, you know, kept coming up again, where, you know, the special teams again, and granted, you know, asking Araiza to make a 54-yard field goal is not an easy task. You know, that gets pushed. Hard. Yeah. And then, but then again, the very next drive, Utah State goes down. They have another roughing the passer penalty. That's the one you mentioned on Cameron Thomas. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, do they punch it in a couple of plays later, 1 yard out? That's up. They're up 14 to nothing.
Calvin Tyler long run than the short one.
Yeah, so it was sort of like, you know, you started seeing things where San Diego State started, you know, making mistakes that they don't typically make. But at the same time, you know, Utah State kept making plays that, and especially on the defensive side of the ball, that they hadn't always made throughout the year. So, like, the, you know, the big third down pass breakup that Nick Henninger had right before that missed field goal.
Oh yeah, it could have been a touchdown pass if he didn't get him knocked the ball. That guy was wide open down the middle of the field.
Exactly. Or the fact that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, Tariq Thompson had a dropped interception. So did Taylor Hawkins in that second quarter. I believe it was at the 5-yard line.
Well, it's close enough. Like, it would have been a touchback probably.
Yeah,
but like he went off his hands, off his knees. Like, he's going to come down. Like, if you have that one, the pick six, like. These weren't like the people being out. These weren't backups not making plays. Like, these were starters in there who just didn't go their way. Like, it was everything that went wrong for San Diego State pretty much went wrong. Missed field goals, blocked punts, penalties are another thing, but
The game didn't really start to be over, to feel like it was over really until the third quarter.
Till the safety, I think. That's when I felt it was over.
No, I thought it was the 58-yard touchdown to Brandon Bowling.
Oh, was that the one before the opening drive touchdown?
Because, you know, and they did a really good job of explaining sort of what happened on that play on the broadcast. But basically, you know, Trenton Thompson stopped running with Bowling in the slot because he thought that, you know, I believe it was Patrick McHorse was going to
help.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be able to help over the top and you know, navigate backwards. And when that didn't happen, there was basically nobody within 10 or 15 yards of Bowling. From there, the route was on.
Yeah, because it's San Diego State can't score points. Because the reason I bring up the field goal, it's like backtrack. And they make, well, whatever, 50-yarder is hard to do. They miss a couple of field goals. Like Utah State played well, but they missed field goals. They had a few issues here and there. But San Diego State just, here's the problem. It's kind of what I said before, not the way the game came out, because nobody saw it coming. I thought it'd be a low-scoring game like most people did, and Aztec's probably winning. But problem is when your defense, who normally makes plays, isn't making plays, and when your running game only gets Greg Bell, got, what, 50 yards in this game?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. And your special teams, which is always huge for you, and so they scored, was it 16 points off turnovers, off special teams mess-ups?
Because I'm trying to find that right now.
Well, they got the safety. They got the in the first half. They scored a touchdown.
I think technically they only, well, I mean, according Nine? To Stat Broadcast, they only had 3 points off turnovers.
That's weird. Well, I mean, special teams, not just turnovers, but special teams.
Oh, right.
So the safety, special teams, they had the block in the first half that led to a touchdown. Did the second block have a touchdown as well? I don't recall.
I believe so.
So, okay, 16 points. Like, normally, that's like their reason they can win games by switching field positions and all that type of stuff. And we, like I even said, like, well, it could be a bonus for both teams because Savon Scarver can return pretty well. Aztecs can return well, but obviously the punting game. But that's huge. That's 16 points there. Pick six, that's, think of it this way, 16 points of turnover of the special teams. 3 points of turnovers, that's 19. The pick six that could have happened is 26 points. You get an interception near the goal line, takes away 7 points. Like, that's like a 30-point swing off of plays that I don't think not that would happen, but there's a good 25 to 30 points that if Aztecs just make their plays, would this outcome would have been, who knows what the outcome would have been. Right? Like, if you get the punts off, maybe Utah State still scores maybe 10 points instead of, you know what I mean, 16, because they get a touchdown on field goal off of punts. Just because their offense goes normal, but there's not safety, there's not this other just bad juju going on when things aren't going well. Like, there's multiple plays where San Diego State just converted half of them their way. Maybe they win. Maybe it's only a one score game, and it's something down to the wire. I don't think that's too far fetched to say.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, at a certain point though, the ifs really start to add up.
No, I know. I'm just saying. You know what I mean. I'm not giving excuses, but
no. I get what you're saying. I think you know, but it wasn't like, you know, everybody played well either though. Like, that's the other thing. You know, at some point you need your playmakers to step up and make plays. You know, the secondary blew a couple of really critical coverages. In the running game, you know, the running game had a few big plays back when it was still competitive. But then at a certain point, you look back and you realize, okay, well, Jordan Brookshire completed under 50% of his passes.
Again, he threw 23 times, doesn't go well. They brought in Jalen Maiden just because, well, the game's pretty much over. It's getting some playing time.
Yeah,
50%. Like, if he goes 11 for 17 and 117, that's fine. But 11 for 23, no interceptions. But still, there's all the other stuff that was going on. They had a couple, two fumbles, Jordan Bird, Greg Bell. It's like, well.
Yeah, and, you know, and Jesse, you know, to his credit, Jesse Matthews had a really good game.
Yeah, he came up
like eight catches, 82 yards, and a score on 12 targets. Like, he was, which is not to say that they didn't have any other reliable receivers. Like, you know, BJ Busby caught 3 of his 5 targets. Elijah Cody had, you know, 2 of his 3 targets caught. It was just, you know, the passing game wasn't there in the same way that it had been for most of the second half of the season.
Because Matthews had, what, 6 touchdowns in the final, like, 3 or 4 games.
Well, it's not just that. It's just, you know, the quarterback play wasn't there.
And part
of that was Brookshire. But again, part of that has to do with the fact that Utah State showed out on defense.
Can I call it, too? Brookshire would have a down game after playing well when he came in reserves, just like, you know, Justin Rogers, UNLV.
But to me, the more shocking thing was, like, you know, I think everybody was sort of on the same page that the Aztecs were going to have a really significant, maybe not a significant advantage on the offensive line, But, you know, you're talking about a unit that had like, you know, one or two all conference type players. And they gave up 5 sacks, 8 TFLs, 6 pass breakups. You know, Nick Henninger had a couple of pass breakups.
Wearing the Jordans out there to fly, man. Jeez.
And 8 quarterback hurries. Like, you know, that was a dominant performance by that front.
They embarrassed the San Diego State offensive line.
Yeah. And like everybody was making hay. You know, Justin Rice had a sack, Byron Vaughn's had a sack and a half, Marcus Moore, AJ Bonpachon. Yeah. Like it was basically like, you know, it was a team effort in the same way that, like, you know, we had seen it at times. It was just sort of one of those things. Well, are they going to be able to do it against this offensive line? Mission accomplished. Yeah. Like, you know, that right there is another major factor in this game.
I should look this up. I can pull up now, but the only all conference player Utah State was Devin Tompkins, right? From the conference stuff.
I believe so. Yeah.
It's like no Justin Rice, no obviously Logan Bonner, not obviously, but there's a lot of good quarterbacks. He's like, what, technically quarterback number 4, maybe? You know what I mean?
He was an honorable mention, yeah.
It's a lot of good quarterback play. But like, so here's a bigger question. Like, the rest of the game, the fluky fumble, damn, when Jordan Nathan scored, that was kind of like, oh, it's just kind of, oh, well, everything's going as Aggie's way at this point. Mm-hmm. But where was this Utah State team all year? Because they got blown up by one, and people criticize us, oh, they're losing, blah, 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 or we're now Utah State side. I'm like, please, leave us alone. It's funny. But I still don't think we're wrong, because this result is quite puzzling from what we've seen all year. They get beat out by Wyoming. They struggle for random times throughout games against New Mexico State and a few other teams or Colorado State. This team is hard to peg down to what they can do well. And so if you're saying they're gonna win, it'd be like what you and everybody else are, like a close one. But this team just so, like, even our DMs, like, they're playing Oregon State in the Bowl. Our buddy Andy Dykoff, who's an Oregon State guy, is like, so what do you expect? And we're like, me, I think for Sam Berlug, I'm like, inconsistent. You know what I mean? Running game could be great. Like, this game could give up 500,000 yards. This team is just hard to peg, and that's been their issue. I guess, heck, they finished 10-3. It's amazing. But they're a wild, not inconsistent, but a unpredictable 10-3, if that makes sense. Because their game's like, well, are they really this good? They're beating these teams. They got blown out by Boise State, but it was more of a turnover issue. They beat Air Force in a high-scoring game. It's like the team has their floor and ceiling can be all over the place, so it's hard to tell. Like, we know they're really good, but they can also be not good for a couple times, or just be sporadic in a schizophrenic type of football team.
So I'm going to answer that question by referring to a tweet that I put out there, you know, late yesterday after the game was over. And you probably know the one I'm referring to.
Probably. There's a lot of tweets. So for a fresh memory, to honestly, you don't know exactly.
So are you familiar with the Circle of Suck?
Oh, you mean who beats who, that one?
Yes. So in a nutshell, and, you know, you've probably seen graphics on this if you're on Twitter. So basically, like, I laid out how, you know, there was a chain by which, you know, Utah State beats San Diego State, and then do you want me to just read it?
Yeah.
Would that be really boring?
No, it's not. Just go for it. People need to know.
Okay. So Utah State beat San Diego State in the championship game. Mm-hmm. San Diego State beat Air Force. Air Force beat UNLV. UNLV beat New Mexico. New Mexico beat Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Wyoming beat Colorado State. Colorado State beat San Jose State. San Jose State beat Hawaii. Hawaii beat Fresno State. Fresno State beat Nevada. Nevada beat Boise State. And Boise State beat Utah State. So that's a long way of saying that it is very hard in a small sample size, like a college football season, to be consistent from week to week, unless you're like an elite, unless you're like an Alabama or something like that. Every team in the Mountain West this year had at least one clunker. And so the Aggies aren't really an exception in that regard. And neither are the Aztecs. And so, you know, I think the bigger, maybe to kind of narrow the focus a little bit, in my opinion, it was always about how much was the defense going to be able to catch up to this offense. And what you started seeing, especially later in the year, is that defense was really starting to pick it up. And so, like, and I know that we put out like the SP Plus rankings, you know, week after week. And to me, like, that's where the biggest area of improvement on this team was, is just their ability to get into the backfield, create havoc, you know, force turnovers, create mistakes like that. You know, we weren't really seeing as much of that in the first half of the year, which is why you ended up like with games like the Air Force game where, you know, they bent a lot, but again, you know, they found ways to, you know, create turnovers and make plays when it counted. And as the season progressed, you started seeing more of just like, you know, not necessarily being fortunate, but just being good. And that's exactly what they were in this game, is they were just dominant on all fronts.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I know they can't be dumb every game. It's just, it's like if you're listening to Solid Orbital, it's like when you're clunkers, and they won quite a few of them, and 10-3 is 10-3. But then again, there's not necessarily a luck factor or.
But I would also say, too,
that they're good, too. They're also a good team.
But there were other, you know, instances that we really overlooked, I think, with regards to this team, too. Like, you know, I can't remember if I mentioned it on the preview podcast or not. But, you know, we coming into this game, they had the best red zone defense in the entire Mountain West. You know, in terms of their ability to keep opponents from scoring touchdowns, you know, they were under 50% going into this game. San Diego State was 3 of 5 in the red zone. You know, we talked about that, you know, the 4th-and-1 stop at the Utah State 12. But, you know, the one touchdown they scored was when the game was already well out of reach anyway. You know, they forced a couple fumbles. They did their job on all fronts. And some of those, you know, in some of those ways, they had been doing it all season long. And in other ways, it was just a matter of sort of polishing off the rough edges and, you know, being a complete unit. And honestly, that's a credit to the defensive coordinator, Ephraim Banda, and as well as, you know, everybody on that unit, because, you know, they, and again, this was something else they pointed out on the podcast, like they brought in all of these pieces from other programs and got them to play like this on a big stage, you know, less than, you know, what, you know, months later. I'm not even going to call it a turnaround. It's just like a remarkable culmination of what this team set out to do.
This may be an off-season thing to talk about, but they are the most improbable Mountain West champion, as far as I can remember. The only thing that would have been closer is had that three-way tie year New Mexico went to the title game and won. That was New Mexico, Boise, and Wyoming, that three-way tie.
And Air Force, I believe. Was that the year they all won 10 games?
Something like that, where there's like a three-way tie. This, like, improbable, just like you mentioned. But again, who knows if there's new people listening or whatnot, but Utah State literally quit last year and didn't play their final game of the year with one game. Gary Anderson, again, quit like he did at Oregon State, where, oh, he's not giving money back to coach the team or taking money, but he leaves his assistants high and dry midseason where it's hard to get a job, which is kind of tricky. But this team was basically left for dead and predict 5th. And I'm going to do a piece this week about, I wanted to wait till the title game was over after I thinking about it, because I did so much stuff, but basically how wrong we were essentially for our preseason picks and stuff, just kind of compare, because that's always fun, because it'd be accountable and people can make fun of us. It's great and whatever, but like this, maybe San Jose State last year, these last two conference champions are, nobody saw this coming. Like more, maybe San Jose State's a bit more because how bad they've been the past while outside of the David Fells years. But this in San Jose State last year, very improbable to get to the conference championship game and win. Last year's a different story, but they still went undefeated, and I don't care. They were really good last year, San Jose State. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, when Fresno a little bit, when they went from 1 to 10, did they win that year, Matt, or did they just get to the title game?
No, they got to the title game, but they lost it to Boise State.
Okay. Like, there's a lot of big turnarounds, but like, to actually win it, it's got to be these past two. And this one, not – it's hard to say because San Jose State was slowly increasing, but from what Utah State is going through midseason last year till now, oh boy, this the most unlikely conference champion in the league's history, I want to say.
Not a fluke either.
I don't think it's a fluke. We could say they're inconsistent because they were up and downs. Not a fluke when they won 46 to whatever they won. Was it 46-13 here?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, not a fluke they won, but just kind of nobody saw it coming. Like, everybody. Like, the only people on Twitter, like, preseason, I remember, oh, they're going to do this, they're going to compete. We're like, whatever, get out of here. Just some super Aggie fan, which, and that could be the case, but they're still be lying to themselves. They think they knew they'd be this good or have a chance. They're just saying, well, we got these pieces. Well, yeah, you got pieces. But remember the first month of the year, they had Andrew Peasley and Logan Bonner because neither were healthy, or Bonner wasn't really successful and is still coming off the injury, which made him not look as good. Mm-hmm. So all those fans back, see, we told you, I'm like, you can say all you want, say, oh, they're going to be great. You're just a big, big time fan, which is awesome because your team did great and I love it. But you can't be serious and say, oh, they're going to compete for the conference title after what we saw last year.
I mean,
first year head coaches don't do this.
Not typically, not always.
And so that's why it's very surprising.
I'm interested in sort of the lasting impact of how they built this team and maybe, you know, how they executed their game plans, because, you know, we didn't really talk about it in terms of like how they attacked the Aztecs in this game. But one thing that stood out to me was just like how, I don't know if brazen is the right term for it, but like, you know, we knew coming into this game that, you know, San Diego State's ability to defend the pass was probably like one of the things that they did best, right? And Utah State came out swinging, and you know,
going deep. It wasn't Devin Tompkins either.
No. And I feel very vindicated for pointing out Brandon Bowling in the preview podcast. You know, he was the one that actually led the team in, you know, 8 catches, 154 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, you're welcome.
Should
on
he
that,
have been MVP? Should he have been MVP over Logan Bonner offensive?
I mean, I can understand why they gave it to Logan Bonner because he did have a great game. And he had a great game because he was not afraid to attack the Aztecs down the field. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that they gave him time to hold up, even though he did take a few hits, got up slow once or twice. Yeah. I think he had a banged up, non-throwing wrist at some point.
Yeah.
But, you know, he took shots and then just
kept on swinging. That were just inches overthrown too. One or two, like, a couple that were just could have been caught, but just a little bit far.
He was at the, like, you know, rolling out to the left hash mark, but then throwing to someone out on the right sideline or something like that. It was like, wow. Okay. He's really going for it. But then they went for it on fourth down themselves a couple times, converted both times. Mm-hmm. You know, they put the pedal to the metal with a team that was, you know, coming into the season really built in a way that was unlike every other team in the Mountain West. You know, with all the transfers. And I'm really interested to see if other teams in the Mountain West or maybe across the group of five look at what they've been able to accomplish in Logan and be like, well, okay, can we do that?
Why do you think they did that? Because I'm not sure, because Devin Tompkins wasn't great last year. It was like nothing like this. They brought in a transfer quarterback, new coach, transfer defense. A lot of these guys are still on the – here's the thing, too, that's interesting. A lot of the guys are on the team last year. Like, it wasn't bringing in 20 new transfers.
Yeah, like, they didn't convince everybody to come back, but they did convince a lot of guys to come back.
But guys, like, new guy, like, who – like, maybe I'm shooting from hip here. I should probably know, but new guys, like, brand new transfers, what, Justin Rice and Logan Bonner?
Well, okay, and so there's Bonner, there's Bowling, there's
– Oh, Bowling, okay.
Tompkins was going to leave, you know, Calvin Tyler Jr. was a transfer from Oregon State.
That's right.
You know, Justin Rice, Hunter Reynolds, Byron Vaughns, Marcus Moore, Cash Gilliam, Patrick Joyner. Yeah. Like they were putting like, it's literally like 9 or 10 guys who came in off the transfer portal and are impact starter guys, which is, you know, relative to everything else in the Mountain West that happened this year, unheard of. But they found a way to make it work.
Well, Logan Bonner basically said he's coming back next year.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a tweet from I retweeted because I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have. See, Devin Tompkins is gone. Wouldn't surprise me, but I'm not sure if that's the case. I've looked around, but I haven't seen anything about it. So I don't know. Also, Utah State, how did they not get ranked at the final poll?
Well, I know they got ranked in the AP poll. Did they not?
I'm looking at the playoff poll where they still have San Diego State, number 24.
Yeah.
Not a problem. I was just wondering. Okay. Anything else to add about this game or team? Because it'd be nice to see if they keep going. We'll see. But I think that's anything on the Aztec side at all. But
I mean, it's
get a quarterback, guys. Get a QB. I don't know. That's what I always think for San Diego State. Get a decent quarterback.
Well, I think they're looking forward to the Will Haskell era, in a lot of respects. But I mean, I think, you know, for the Aztecs, it's, you know, they knew what they wanted to do. They did it for the most part all season long. And I mean, I don't really see that, you know, they're going to radically overhaul their offensive philosophy in particular going into the next year. you know, they'll obviously have one more chance to kind of prove it on the field, you know, in a couple of weeks. But yeah, I mean, I think it's not necessarily that they needed a new quarterback. You know, they just needed more than they got in this game from Brookshire. And so in that way, it's sort of disappointing because, you know, where the defense maybe took a half step back in some respects in the second half of the year in particular, which, you know, I pointed out, you know, sort of in the middle of the game that, you know, for the year, they were giving up roughly 6 yards per attempt. But in November, that average crept up to about 7 yards per attempt. You know, so they were getting pushed a little more often and they were giving up a few more completions per game. You know, I think it was in those four November games, they were giving up 60% of completions as well, which is, I believe, if my math is correct, is pretty much what Bonner was able to accomplish in this game, 29 of 42. And so yeah, I think, you know, their future is still relatively bright. You know, I think, you know, the game plan is still in place. What they want to do is still in place. Maybe they were ahead of schedule. Maybe they were a little bit fortunate to, in the same way that Utah State was, to win so many close games. But I don't necessarily think that that means they're going to take like a huge step back or regress all the way to the mean or beyond it going into 2022. You know, obviously they're going to be losing maybe some impact guys like Cameron Thomas if he decides to leave early for the NFL. But, you know, a lot of that young talent isn't going anywhere. You know, like Jaden Armstead could step into the breach at running back and be part of that committee. You know, like Noah Tumblin is going to be back. You know, Noah Avenger is going to be back. CJ Baskerville, who another guy I pointed out, he had two pass breakups in that game. So, I mean, I think they're going to be fine. Obviously, it's not the result they wanted. But I don't necessarily think they're going to necessarily not be a contender going into the near future either.
Yeah, they're going to be fine. It's always the thing with San Diego State. It's what they are. This title game, I'm not going to say everything went right for Utah State and everything went wrong for San Diego State, but it's almost like 85%.
It was pretty close.
It was pretty close. I'm just saying, like, who expects three special teams issues? Like, drop passes, this is arguably the worst game San Diego State played all year. The worst game they played all year. And Utah State, this is their best game all year. So Utah State showed up to play. San Diego State, not saying they didn't show up to play, but results speak for themselves.
But you know what? They both get to go bowling.
Bowl time. Good move. All right. So here we go. We're wrapping up here because we're on a time crunch here, about 15 minutes. Not a ton to talk about, but 8 bowl games because, you know, is the new bowl game called the Frisco Classic? Is that really the name of it?
I believe the Frisco Football Classic is what it's officially called.
Like so
called. I think it was CBS Sports who called it the Mystery Meat Bowl.
Sure, why not?
But you know, I like how they call it a classic, even though it was literally made about a week ago.
Totally. So we have 8 teams going bowling because the reason we're bringing that bowl game because they want everybody to go bowling because I think it would have been Ball State would have been left out.
Yeah, so it was either Ball State or Miami of Ohio. One of the MAC teams.
Unfortunately. So we have 18 to go bowling. Hawaii stays home, which is fine. Let me ask you a quick question. How does the Arizona Bowl get pick number 2? Weren't they like the worst bowl position years ago?
I didn't know that there was a set hierarchy.
Me neither, but BJ Rain said they got the second pick.
Yeah, he had mentioned that Andy Avalos mentioned that in the conference call. I'm not sure how that works.
So here's the bowl matchup. We have I should pull up an article here. Somebody read it. So we have – is the PUBG a new name for the New Mexico Bowl?
I believe it is a brand new sponsor. I was looking at it days ago. It was simply the New Mexico Bowl. Now it is is it PUBG or is it just PUBG? I have no idea.
It's PUBG.
Okay.
Makes more sense. It's a like Fortnite kind of game. That makes sense.
Is that the underground battleground or whatever?
Yes. So like here's what sucks. Hey, it's like Fortnite. What is it, PUBG? It's like Fortnite. So Fortnite gets extra pump with it too.
Gotcha.
I mention that every time. I've played a little bit on just here and there. Okay. Yeah, New Mexico, Fresno State versus UTEP, which is some awesome. Dana Dimmel got the Miners to a 7-5 record. Weren't they 5-0 at one point, I believe?
Yeah.
Pretty good. This may sound dumb, but were Fresno State and UTEP in the WAC together?
Yes, they were. Point. Last time they played was in 2004, the year before UTEP left for Conference USA.
So there was Fresno State part of the obviously the 16 team WAC.
Yeah.
Is really dumb.
They were in the WAC together into the 2000s.
Yeah. How far back was Fresno State in the WAC?
I want to say
were they in the Big West before?
I want to say they were like Yeah, I believe so.
Because I remember, like,
into the mid-90s, I think they were.
The Big West. Okay. I just, for some reason, I'm like, Fresno State wasn't a whack, but they weren't there for, like, they weren't playing BYU and Utah and Wyoming all the time. That's what I remember.
No.
Okay. So, that game, we'll get to those games later. We'll just kind of briefly go through these because we're going to go quickly. The one thing about this game is no coach. Who all left to go to Washington? Is it currently just officially Kellen DeBoer, or did offensive coordinator go? Anybody else follow him along up there? Do we know yet?
So I can't recall if any of those moves have been made official, but there were roughly four or five coaches who were going to be following DeBoer to Seattle. So right now the interim coach is Lee Marks, the running backs mm-hmm. coach. Although I did note earlier today that William Inge, the defensive coordinator, did tweet about Fresno State's upcoming bowl game. So I took that to mean that he would at least stick around for that.
Why don't they just have Jeff Tedford coach? Because he's going to be the head coach in like a week.
Well, we'll wait and see.
Pull Bob Stoops. Come on. Barry Alvarez.
Okay.
Why not? That'll be fun. The reason it'll be an interesting game because I don't know who's going to win because no quarterback also. Is Jalen Cropper still on the team? Because Jake Haner's going to Washington.
Right now he is, yeah. Well.
So we'll see how that goes. That's a pretty big deal. But if not, here's the thing. If not, let's see the future week one, you know what I mean? Or bowl game number one or whatever it is. So mm-hmm. we have that game. We have the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl what is he doing at the bowl game? He tweeted some snarky comment with Utah State playing Oregon State.
Yeah, he was giving permission for them to do battle and then said, may God help us all.
Exactly. Is he going to be like the coin toss guy? What's he going to do? He better show up during the game at some point, right?
I'm sure he will.
So we have them playing Oregon State, who has turned around. They did beat Utah somehow, which still perplexes me.
They beat Hawaii in non-conference play, too.
That's true. They beat Hawaii as well. Hey, Calvin Tyler Jr. gets to face his old team. So
that's true. It's also the Gary Anderson Bowl. You're burying the lead.
The Gary. Okay, have we tweeted that out yet? Because that's a pretty good thing to do. So
I mentioned that in the article when I posted it.
Okay. I didn't think about that. Yeah, Gary Anderson. Or I even mentioned it early in the recap. The game Oregon State and Utah State, him leaving them high and dry. It's an ABC game, so it's the first bowl weekend, December 18th. I believe these are all chronological order we're going through, so. We got the Idaho Bowl, Wyoming, Kent State. So you got to play a MAC team. A lot of MAC, as somebody put on Twitter, Matt, this should be the MAC Mountain West Challenge bowl season edition.
Exactly.
Kent State, 7-6. Did anybody in the Mountain West play Kent State this year? I'm trying. I think somebody.
No, they did not.
Okay, I'm thinking. Okay, and now you end up with the conference title. So that gives Wyoming does some pretty good credit being two conference champions.
Yes, that's true.
So good for them. So they're made the official Mountain West American Conference champions. Also, it should be noted, defensive line coach for Wyoming is going to Washington State for the same position. That was announced today, essentially.
Oh, yeah, so is Nevada's defensive coordinator, Brian Ward.
Nevada defensive coordinator as well, yes. And I think the Nevada D-line coach going as well somewhere?
I didn't see that, but I saw that Ward was leaving.
Maybe I misplaced the article on the update for the coaching track. I'll have to check on that. That's what I meant to say, but he's gone. The Frisco Bowl, San Diego State versus UTSA. Dude, 12-1 UTSA, that's pretty good.
Conference USA champions.
Champion, they crushed Western Kentucky. This will be 11-2, 12-1. This will be an underrated bowl game to watch. It's on, obviously, ESPN. It's a 6:30 local kick, Central Time. It doesn't say the date here. Maybe I should look at the article, not the Mountain West article on the website. But I apologize. I just had that open here. I'm like, I'll just click on it. But they play. That'll be an interesting game. The Roadrunners score a lot of points. That'll be – we'll see if Aztecs get things going, right, by then. Hawaii plays Memphis, which I want to say Memphis is a pretty good team, but they're only 6-6, Matt.
They were pretty average this year.
So, also Hawaii, this is another big thing. We're going to try to do a podcast with RJ Hollis this week to discuss about all the Hawaii craziness mm-hmm. and our buddy Scott as well. They've lost their starting cornerback, Shavon Cordero, D.D. Hunter. Who anybody else? I know there's a lot more guys, I think.
He's not in the transfer portal, but Aaron Cephas is no longer on the roster.
Okay.
They've also lost Cameron Lockridge to the transfer portal, one of their starting mm-hmm. cornerbacks. The exodus, at least for right now, is still ongoing.
Okay. And we'll wrap up real quick. The quick lane bowl, Nevada versus Western Michigan going out in Detroit, which will be interesting because Western Michigan will have sort of a home field advantage or maybe home fans.
And first time a Mountain West team is playing in that bowl too.
Interesting. Okay. Also it's a freaking 11 a.m. Eastern kickoff. Oh boy.
That's gonna be an adventure.
Yeah, that's what day is that? That's on December 27th, a Monday. So I guess sure, why not? Curses break, watch it. Carson Strong, Romeo Dub. This will be we'll see this game. This will be a pretty game. We'll dive into these deeper. We're just kind of hustling through here because we gotta go. First Responders Bowl, which was a shock, kind of a surprise that this happened. Air Force versus Louisville, which is good. get to play a team from the ACC. So it's a mid-afternoon game, and Air Force has won a couple bowl games or back-to-back. They have been to 11 bowl games under Troy Calhoun, so there's that.
Yes.
And it'll be obviously the first time they play Louisville, and it'll be a – it's always fun in bowl games when Air Force plays a random team who never sees a triple option. However, the Louisville plays Georgia Tech. I don't know if they played them this year, but they're in the ACC. So there'll be a touch of familiar.
Tech doesn't run the triple option anymore, though.
Last year.
But Scott Satterfield, the Louisville head coach, did coach in the Sun Belt for a time, where he got to face off with Georgia Southern. So he's at least passingly familiar with the triple option. Sorry,
I forgot Georgia Tech changed, but okay, there's some familiarity there. But it's also always fun to see. It's like, we're doing what defense or offense? We have to do, what do they do? What's a fullback, coach? Can you tell me what that is? And the final bowl game is the bowl game.
The Arizona Bowl.
100%. Arizona's bowl, Boise State, Central Michigan. Andy Avalos is trying to make an 8-5 record out of the Boise State team, playing a pretty good 8-4 Central Michigan team. It's a New Year's Eve game, which means nobody's going to watch, which there is a free way to watch this game, but I'm not going to watch it. I'm just telling you right now, guys. I don't care.
We'll tell you how to watch it, but safe to say our enthusiasm is somewhat muted, I guess.
Creed's at halftime.
Yes. Yeah. It's gonna be the worst.
I'll listen to the boy till what's his name? He does it for a voice. I forget. I should know his name, but I'll probably listen to the radio broadcast because why not? So that's a bowl game they're in. So we'll see how that goes.
So to wrap all this up, I mean, because I know we sort of ran through the games real quick, and we'll talk about them individually more at length.
Yep.
Sort of, what's your first impression of this bowl lineup? Because I know a lot of people are sort of at the moment unhappy in terms of, you know, why are we facing so many MAC teams? Why are we facing Conference USA teams? And I think it was Reddit College Football put it out there that there's like 43 bowls out there. Seven of them this year are between Power 5 and Group of 5 teams.
And so I don't really count the New Year's Six or playoff as one of those because you have to have that.
And yeah, so I would say that, you know, whatever problem, quote unquote, the Mountain West has isn't necessarily isolated to our conference. So, like, what would you say to get people hyped up for this slate of bowl games?
You get to watch your team play another freaking college football game. Well, what else do you want? Look at last year. How many teams didn't want to go to a bowl game? Because, understandably, with COVID and everything, Boise State dropped out. Like, we're not doing this. My University of Utah team, like, we're done. We miss, like, every other week. It's another team, another time to see your team. And if you're like freaking out, Fresno State fan, I get to see a new quarterback who could be playing next year.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a San Diego State fan, I get the bad taste of losing the Mountain West title game to play a really good Roadrunner team in Conference USA. If I'm Hawaii, Hawaii, same thing. I get to see, even though there's turmoil and there's a lot of weird stuff going on there with Todd Graham and everything, you get to see a lot of new players who might be leaving the team next season. That's part of it. If you're Nevada, I want to see Strong to Dubs one more time, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's reason to be excited, but I give. Mix an American team would be nice, but here's the thing, too. Location. I get the Quick Lane Bowl is in the Eastern time zone, but the Mountain West and Old Rock used to have their conference champion going to the freaking Liberty Bowl in Memphis, Tennessee.
That's true.
Like, they want teams to stay in their geographical region, but then it's like, well, why does the Mac come out here? I'm like, well, I can't explain that for you, but you're not going to play many Pac-12 teams. You're not going to play any Big 12. It'd be nice. Cheez-It Bowl we've had there occasionally. But I would just say it's another time to see your team. And if you're being honest, when you're playing a Mountain West team, it's like, well, there's no much difference to the 8-4 Western Michigan team than a whatever record Air Force, you know what I mean? Like in that match or those matchups.
Mm-hmm.
But I get the thing. But Power 5s want to play each other, which is understandable. TV networks would rather have that. But watch your team play again and be excited for another college football game. It's a fun TV show to watch. Just go watch your team and have fun.
Let's put it this way. We're going to do bowl podcasts in the next few weeks, and I'm going to make sure that I give people reasons to tune into each game.
Heck yeah. We're going to talk to the guys who cover the team, either written or spoken on podcasts. We're going to just pay attention, man. It's not a football game.
You can be forgiven for not thinking about Central Michigan football this year.
We'll do it for you.
But we're going to do the thinking for you, and we're going to make sure that it's worth your while to tune into those games.
All of us, all of our riders, we'll have plenty of stuff out there to get everybody going. Because bowl week is December 18th. And
it's a couple weeks.
2 weeks. So here's what our plan, real quick, wrap up here. Our plan kind of the 6 week. There's my mic. We're going to do a Hawaii-centric podcast this week at some point. We may do an early bowl stuff end of the week. We'll figure out. We have a couple of podcasts planned up. Me and Matt need to discuss offline. But at minimum, we're going to do something about Hawaii this week because that's a wild situation. And maybe we'll do a fun podcast about us screwing up on our preseason predictions for us and our staff. That'll be fun, right? We just make fun of ourselves. Stuff like that. So just stay tuned. Subscribe. MWR.com, Twitter, MWCYR. And season's almost over, but we got you covered. It's year-round here, football. Don't worry about it, folks. We got you covered. We're good. And with that, we'll see you in a couple of days.